black.
Good morning. May it please the court. Thomas Michelle on behalf of Dr. Izu Kanma. I think I will be somewhat brief this morning. The issue today is obviously an appeal from a, which Dr. Izu Kanma contends is a wrongful or an abuse of discretion from the trial court failing to reduce his child support. As the court is aware, there are six children involved in this case. That is a lot of children. I think a lot of this evidence is largely undisputed in the record, but some principal guidelines I think we need to address a little bit at first. In the Family Code, Section 154.122, child support guidelines are presumed to be reasonable and to be in the children's best interest. Application of the guidelines is presumed to be in the best interest of the children, Section 154.123. A trial court can vary from these guidelines if they rebut this presumption. And finally, I think another applicable Family Code section is 154.062, which addresses the net resources that may be considered for child support. 154.062 states that the court shall calculate net resources for the purposes of determining child support liability as provided by this section. Resources include 100% of all wages and salary, interest dividends, royalty income, self-employment income, rental income, and five, all other income. Common theme there, income. Resources do not include, under Section C, return of principal or capital, accounts receivable, or benefits paid in accordance with family or dependent children. Then D provides that there are certain deductions about Social Security taxes, your standard type of deductions for taxes and things of that nature, and health insurance. With that in mind, we come to the facts of this particular case, which are pretty unique in my tenure in doing this, and I thought fairly dramatic when I got this case. We had a doctor who had a successful practice for a number of years and making a very good living. I think approximately about $425,000 in 2007. He was with a nice large practice of 30 to 35 doctors. And presumably that is one reason why the child support obligation was set so high at, even with six children, at $5,400 a month. If you look at that, that's approximately $65,000 a year before taxes just in child support. If you look at that, if you just kind of use the ballpark, sometimes I kind of gauge that, that's about $90,000 to $100,000 in earnings you've got to make, because you take your third out for taxes, you've got that left over to pay child support. So I mean, he's starting at about $90,000 or $100,000 to where he has zero to live on, and all going to child support. But that was the order in 2007, and Dr. Izukama's income in 2007 was a very healthy income of $425,000.
And did he appeal that modification?
He did not.
Okay.
He did not, Your Honor.
So that was established in what month of 2007?
November of 2007.
Okay.
That brings us forward. Fairly dramatic events happen in 2008. He is fired from his pulmonary practice along with four other doctors. So from the last order, we have a very large salary. To the current order, we have a very much lower salary. That evidence was undisputed. I think a lot of this evidence is undisputed. There is no evidence of to rebut the presumption of special needs of the children. Dr. Izukama testified about not having other sources of income other than from Alpha. He testified that in the first part of 08, he was unable to receive any paychecks from Alpha, Alpha being his new practice that he established.
But wasn't it correct that he didn't offer income tax returns or pay stubs or W-2s as required during pretrial discovery?
That is correct, Your Honor. He did provide the tax returns from 07.
Okay.
At the time of trial in 09, I don't believe the tax returns would have been prepared at that time. So he attempted, I believe, to enter those into evidence, and they were objected to and sustained and not entered into evidence. But he did testify as to what his lack of income was. That's in the evidence, and that's it's kind of a double-edged sword when you want to object to blocking evidence, which is necessary to rebut a presumption, in that if that evidence has come in as to what his income is in that state, he did get to income in a different way and through his testimony. So,
which was?
A variety of things. Income in 2007, no income other than from coming from Alpha in 2008. There was no evidence of special needs of the children. That he testified he had received no paychecks from Alpha. He testified he couldn't borrow money. He was behind on his mortgage, no equity in the house. He took out a loan to start a new practice. His rent house did not generate any income. The Medicaid, this was in the record as well, Medicaid is the sole source of income to Alpha, which is his job. And so there was no income coming in from Medicaid at the time. So this is not to say that Dr. Izukanma hopefully will not get back on his feet. And that's one reason why I think when I approached this case as the appellate lawyer, I asked to go to mediation because I kind of viewed this as a lose-lose situation. You don't want to overburden the person such that they're not able to generate the income. And so I think everybody in this courtroom is hoping that he will get his practice back up and running so that child support can be paid.
So let me ask this. Did he specifically testify that Medicaid was the sole source of income for this new practice group? I mean, I've never heard of a practice group limiting itself to just Medicaid patients.
I believe that is what he testified, Your Honor, was it was the sole source for Alpha.
Okay.
And I was hoping
well,
I had
we'll
that.
Find it.
Okay, I think it's in the record, Judge. I thought I had written that down in my notes to specifically reference that.
That just sort of stood out to me.
It does. I think it's page 61 of the record.
Okay,
Honor,
we'll
of
check
the
it.
Porter's
Thank
record,
you.
If I'm not mistaken. It may be. I think what happens is when you're in established practice like he was, and it may be not all that unlike if you're with a large law firm and then you are forced to go on your own, your referral, a lot of those doctors do the referral sources within the doctor's large, nice large practice. Everybody knows that entity. And so whether you're the doctor who has actually generated that income, maybe, maybe not, but you're the one who got assigned to do all that work. You take that away, these four doctors who were cut out, they're left to go on their own. And so from a business standpoint, if they're just trying to get patients into the office, Medicaid is a nice place to start because you take it and that gets you patients. If not the highest paying patients in the world, they're capped, all of that things, but it's patients in the door as you start to rebuild your practice having been terminated. Those are the realities of the situation. I can't help but draw a little bit of analogies to myself or perhaps even someone else on a large firm if they were to go out and the source of the clients were not, 100% yourself. So you would still have to go out and develop an issue. In the trial court, there was evidence about the availability of other property and things of that nature. I think it's somewhat... it's not reliable as to the income part. I think it probably came in as a result of the enforcement action because they were tried together and to see whether or not he could pay the enforcement. But as I cited, to determine child support, you look at the income that can come in. And the evidence before the court of what his income was virtually nothing. There's even a finding in there that he was intentionally underemployed. I mean, there's no evidence. That's just kind of gilding the lily a little bit about how he's, I don't know who would want to go from $400,000 a year to virtually nothing and starting over and rebuilding a practice. To net resources, they cite the 1976 case, Labowitz, and Penick versus Penick, a 1989 case, is for the proposition that you can look at values of assets. I think clearly the family code precludes that under 154.062. In any event, Labowitz is interesting because there was only a modest, very slight decrease in income, and the court stated on page 925, that site is 542-922, jump site at 925. The court concludes, we cannot agree because we find these changes to be both material and substantially. Obviously, his drop in income in the latter part of 1975 is material in that it affects his relative ability to provide support for the children. And that's the case they cited to the court. In sum, gathering from the court's line of inquiry, the issue here is his income. And what was his income and what was the state of record at the income? There was not a nice, clean, perhaps, spreadsheet of his income, but trial counsel, Mr. McAllister, I believe, got there with his testimony kind of in a piecemeal fashion, trying to identify the available sources of income. So we think certainly the evidence there that you go from a very healthy income to the evidence we contend is virtually no income requires the court to, that the trial court abused its discretion and did not rebut the presumption that at least the child support guidelines should have been in place because it is presumed to be reasonable and is presumed to be in the best interest of the child.
Was that his position, that the child support guidelines should be what he should be required to pay? Or less?
I don't know that it was ever stated that clearly. I just kind of presumed it would be based on the evidence of coming in. I think typically what you do is, in most cases, you know, you don't ever have to have a hearing on these things. You go and show what your income having dropped. But you come down in their court. I don't know that trial counsel ever articulated the standard that should apply specifically in this case. Certainly, it's the presumption, it's the guiding principle that the court's supposed to apply unless you rebut the presumption. So I think it's the guiding principle. So I think that's the rule unless you've got an exception to the rule. In this case, certainly what we're requesting on appeal is that the court either reverse and remand for a calculation of the child support retroactive to the time of filing, and that child support obligation would be capped at the applicable percentage rate and at the applicable child support to be determined. If nothing else, the max is $7,500 of net resources. So the legislature has identified, so that in those situations, you can make millions of dollars, but still you calculate net resources at $7,500. And we have that a lot. We have a lot of times, and a lot of times, a lot of large divorces, you'll have the husband making lots of money, and then, you know, you come in the wife, they're used to making a lot of money, and they're saying, what? You're only capping the child support at $7,500? Yeah, we cut it off there, because that's presumed to be a sufficient amount, regardless of how much you make, to be able to provide for the needs of the children, regardless of stuff. You do have cases where they build in the needs of the children, or I don't know if I've seen any cases go so far as you do with the temporary supports on the standard of living. We're used to, you know, having $30,000 a month to pay the house payment, stuff like that. I haven't seen that standard of living applied to child support. Typically, you have to get to special needs of the children to get over the cap of $7,500. So,
but let me ask this, since it's a modification suit,
yes.
Isn't the presumption and starting point that the current and existing monthly child support is the proper child support, as opposed to going straight to guidelines and starting over from square one?
I think that's a very good question, but I think the way I've analyzed it, I may be wrong, but I think what you do is you look to see the test is, you might be mixing the two tests. I think the first test is to see, is there a material and change in circumstances? Obviously, our position, there's a huge change in circumstance. I mean, huge. Hundreds of thousands of dollars. I mean, if I had been the trial court, I would raise this as unconstitutional. I mean, this is almost like debtor's prison. He can't pay this. And it's absurd to do that to the father's child who exercises his visitation all the time. Once you get to that first part, of a material and material change in circumstances, then I think you go and look at, if there is a material change in circumstances, then the next question to the court is, okay, well, what should the child support be? And then there you look at the, you apply the guidelines. I haven't seen any cases. No, I'm out of time.
I have one question.
Yes, Your Honor.
You mentioned mediation a few minutes ago. Has the case been mediated since it's been on appeal?
Yes. I had filed the motion with the court to, and jointly with the consent of co-counsel. I like to come in a lot of times on appellate cases, and I'm the new player in town, see if we can get it worked out, but we didn't get it settled. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Michelle. Ms. Tillery?
May it please the court, my name is Rebecca Tillery. I represent the appellee, Loretta Ezukanma, and I'll be splitting my time today with Mr. Becker from the Attorney General's office. I'd like to actually start today with trying to address a little bit more specifically, Chief Justice, your question about how do the application of guidelines and the presumption that guideline child support is in the best interest of the children, how does that interplay with a modification suit? There are two cases that I think are on point on this matter, and they're both cited in the briefing. The first is Eskew versus Eskew. The site there is 810 Southwest 2nd, 845. That's an appellate court case out of Texarkana, and it very clearly states that the trial court's use of the percentage guideline child support is discretionary in deciding whether to modify child support. And the second case that I think is helpful is the Lindsay case out of El Paso, 965 Southwest 2nd, 589. And in that case, the court went even a little step further, I think, and said the fact that a child support obligation is not in compliance with guideline child support doesn't in and of itself establish a material and substantial change in circumstances. Going back to the idea of the material and substantial change in circumstances, that's certainly the overarching issue here, and it's the issue that the trial court had to determine. The burden of proof is on Dr. Ezukanma to bring forward sufficient evidence to prove that there has been a material and substantial change in circumstance. I do not believe that the evidence was uncontested at trial or that the evidence was clear as to Dr. Ezukanma's alleged change in circumstances. As Mr. Michelle pointed out, Dr. Ezukanma brought forward absolutely zero evidence with regard to his net resources, his income, what kind of money he was potentially making.
Besides his testimony.
Besides his testimony, no documentary evidence whatsoever. And furthermore, his testimony, a review of the record reveals that his testimony was somewhat vague and disjointed. And the trial court, furthermore, it's within his broad discretion to give, you know, weight to the credibility of that person's testimony. And clearly the trial court did not find Dr. Ezukanma's testimony reliable or credible.
Is there any doubt that he was terminated?
There was no controverting evidence that he had been terminated from his prior employment. However, what there was no evidence of, and Justice Gardner, I believe that you asked the question to Mr. Michelle, what was his income? And Mr. Michelle couldn't answer, and the reason is because the evidence, the record is completely void as to any reference to what his income was. So Dr. Ezukanma, with the burden of proof on him, essentially came forward to the trial court with his hands empty, gave the trial court really no options except to deny the request to lower his child support. His burden is to show the trial court what was his financial situation at the time of the prior order in 07, and what is it now? And his testimony alone is simply not enough to rise to a level of evidence sufficient to find a substantial, material and substantial change in circumstance. The only real documentary evidence with regard to his income was the 07 tax return that showed over $400,000 in income. Something else I'd like to touch on that Mr. Michelle mentioned was whether or not the trial court is allowed to look beyond just the narrow issue of what is a person's income when looking at a child support obligation. And in fact, there's a case that I cited in the briefing, I believe at page 9, Royer versus Royer, 98 Southwest 3rd, 284 out of Beaumont. And I think it's particularly analogous to the situation we have at hand. There, the father had filed a request to modify his child support to lower it. And in fact, in that case, he had brought forward his most current tax return that did show a substantial decrease in his income. However, there, the trial court did not find he had proven a substantial and material change in circumstances because the trial court looked beyond just that tax return. Father looked at the fact that father was essentially able to pay himself from the business that he owned. The trial court looked to the fact that although father's business had lost three of its top accounts, father had continued to make significant personal expenditures in his life and continued to fund his pension plan. The appellate court looked at all this with approval, affirmed the trial court's judgment, and noted the financial ability of the father to pay child support does not depend solely on current earnings, but extends to all sources that might be available, and that it is actually appropriate for the trial court to consider the value of a party's property. So what evidence did the trial court have before it in this situation? The trial court had no documentary evidence as to his current income. But the trial court did have evidence before it of, for example, the fact that Dr. Ezukanma owned a house worth over $500,000. He owned a duplex he rented out. He owned a Lincoln Navigator. He owned property in Nigeria. He had cash on hand of $35,000. He also had a net worth statement that he had himself prepared that he listed his own personal net worth at about $200,000. So the trial court had ample evidence before it that there were more assets out there and more property out there that the trial court can, within its discretion, consider in looking at whether or not there's been a material and substantial change in circumstance. The other question that I believe Mr. Michelle was asked that I'd like to make some clarification was whether or not he had been paid anything from Alpha Pulmonary, Dr. Ezukanma's new practice. What actually was said at trial, and I believe it's the record reflects on pages 46 and 47, Dr. Ezukanma testified that he had received net income from Alpha Pulmonary in 2008. So the question then becomes, where were the pay stubs? Where was the documentary evidence to show that? And it was not the situation that Dr. Ezukanma would urge of, I'm not making any money. In fact, the record reveals that he admitted that he is receiving net income from his new practice. In sum, Your Honors, Dr. Ezukanma neglected to provide sufficient information to allow the trial court to do anything except deny his motion to reduce the child support. The trial court acted within its broad discretion in denying his motion because Dr. Ezukanma failed to bring forward any evidence of current net resources or what his current earnings were, and thus he failed to meet his burden. We would request that you affirm the trial court's decision, and unless there's any other questions, I'll let Mr. Becker take a shot.
All right, thank you, Ms. Tillery. Mr. Becker.
Court. I'll try to keep my remarks brief. I agree with Ms. Tillery that it was Dr. Ezukanma's burden to prove a material and substantial change in circumstances. He attempted to prove that his own financial circumstances had changed. That seemed to be his theory of the case from the beginning. The problem is that he never provided the court with evidence of his current income. He did testify that he was making net income and that his new practice, was making net income. However, he had not provided evidence of what that income was in discovery. And when he was asked what his net income was, he was cut off by an objection that was sustained. And he never produced any income evidence. He didn't preserve that in an offer of proof or a bill of exceptions. He did later admit in cross-examination that his practice group had 2008 profit and loss statements. He was very inconsistent about how often they produced those. These monthly statements, apparently, according to him, were not generated monthly, but they had been generated during 2008. This hearing took place in early 2009. He had presented some evidence of his financial circumstances in an exhibit that's at the very end of this reporter's record, the very end of the documentary evidence portion. And it has a breakdown for 2007 that shows what his income was through his employment at the time. But in 2008, he simply leaves it blank. It's not available. He didn't provide it. He didn't provide it at the hearing. And so the court really had no idea what his current income was, but it had every reason to believe he was making money. He was still working in his specialty field as a pulmonary physician. He was maintaining a house that the court could have believed he was actually still paying for, despite his testimony that he had not been making mortgage payments. His claim, the court obviously did not find credible, that there would be no evidence to show that he had not been making those payments for several months. As was pointed out by trial counsel at the time, you would think someone would have given him some kind of notice, some sort of letter that he was behind, if that were actually true. There was a reason for the court simply not to believe that, and to believe he was maintaining that asset and several other assets, and that he had substantial life insurance policies, cash on hand, as counsel stated earlier. So I would direct the court to the reporter's record. It's volume 2, around pages 46 through about 54. That's where I think he really failed to even assert an amount of income, or that he was making, as is claimed now in his brief, virtually nothing. I don't think the record supports that at all. I don't think you'll find it. And it was his burden to establish that, to prove the grounds for a modification. Very clear from the record, he did not meet it, and that's his problem. There are any questions? I'll be glad to do my best, and if not, I don't have anything further.
All right, thank you, Mr. Becker. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Mr. Michelle, rebuttal.
I think I cited these page references in our briefs, but I wanted to direct the court to page 54 of the record, where Dr. Izukanma was asked whether he had received any paychecks from Alpha Pulmonary. The answer is no. His earlier testimony said that's his place of employment. As I said, it's not maybe as in one fell swoop, but certainly his evidence has been that he received, and this is undisputed in the record, he received no paychecks from Alpha Pulmonary. Testified that Alpha Pulmonary had not received any payments from Medicaid. Undisputed. Undisputed. Alpha Pulmonary's sole source of generating income was Medicaid. Now, we came forward with the evidence. There's no income coming in. If they wanted to come back and say he was lying, they could have done their own discovery and said, here are your records. And in fact, when Dr. Izukanma tried to put in records, they objected to him because they didn't want to see him. So they could have taken depositions. They could have subpoenaed the records. They could have gone to the managing partner of Alpha Pulmonary and say that Dr. Izukanma was lying. From the state of the record before this court, albeit testimony, is that there was no income. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. We appreciate your arguments today and your briefing in preparation for today's submission. Your case is submitted. You are excused, and we will now adjourn.